The Farming Programme with Araquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham, supplying the region for over 40 years.
What happens to the farm when mum or dad or one of the senior partners dies?
Promises, handshakes are made, but it's not legal unless it's written down in the legal document, which is the will.
It's a difficult subject, but we're talking succession planning this week, as well as a look ahead to the Farm Business Innovation Show.
It's all about how farmers can unlock the potential of their farms, bring on additional income streams.
And the slugs are back with a vengeance. Sean's here with crop and agronomy advice, and we'll see how the livestock and grain markets are performing.
The Week in Agriculture. This is the Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Good morning. Hope you've had a good week. In the news this week, the English Winter Fair, due to take place at the Staffordshire County Showground in November, has been cancelled due to the restrictions resulting from Blue Tongue. Congratulations to Nicholas Watts from Vinehouse Farm near Spalding, who's won Arable Farmer of the Year at the British Farming Awards. We'll chat to Nicholas and get his story on the Farming Programme soon. And of course, it's the budget this week. Not going to speculate on its content. We'll know soon enough, but we will examine the implications for agriculture and farming with CLA Regional Director Kath Crowther on next week's programme. So, did you remember the clocks back this morning? Can't believe it's nearly November and just one more week to Lincoln Cathedral's Harvest Festival. I caught up with agricultural chaplain Canon Alan Robson at Lincolnshire Showground the other day.
Well, it's the annual County Harvest Festival. It used to be an NFU organised event, but it's a whole group of people involved this year. So that's 3rd of November, 3 p.m. at the Cathedral. Everybody is welcome. It's not just for farmers, it's everybody. 50th anniversary of the Federation of Young Farmers, the umbrella group that brought all the clubs to work together. And come and see what the young farmers have been getting up to. It's also the 120th year of the anniversary of the founding of Farmers Union. And it's been my 25th anniversary. It's been LRSN's 25th anniversary, obviously, because we were all involved together. And so it's a time of celebration in what has been a really challenging year.
I was going to say, we're celebrating the harvest. We're always giving thanks for the harvest at this time of year, but it's been a tough one, hasn't it?
Yes, and you know, we were both at that conference where we heard lots of issues going on with climate change and more water, how we manage all this water, how do we secure our defences, and you know, really usefully the Bishop of Lincoln, Stephen Conway, has been helping in some of that discussion. He's been bringing people together. It's about showing support and solidarity with the farmers about the issues that they've got to face in the next 5 years, really.
And having got Harvest Festival out of the way and moving on a little bit, of course, Christmas is the next big event, really, isn't it?
Now, I don't know if you've ever tried to book Santa Claus, but I managed to get a hold of him. And we've booked Santa Claus for the first carol service for the Lincolnshire farmers. So a bit like the Harvest Festival. It's Balegate Methodist Church. People can come and do a bit of shopping, do a bit of singing, and then they can go out and do a bit of shopping or have some food. So it's at Balegate Methodist Church on the 22nd of November, 3 o'clock. Lots of farm people are participating. And as I said, Santa Claus will be turning up at the end, I think, to give gifts to any little people that might be there.
Brilliant. Well, first things first, we'll look forward to seeing you at Harvest Festival on the 3rd. Thanks, Alan.
Thank you. All the best.
Also coming soon is the Farm Business Innovation Show at the NEC. Now, if you're thinking of diversifying, it's probably worth a visit. Here's Farmers Guardian editor Olivia Midgley.
It's all about how farmers can unlock the potential of their farms, bring on additional income streams. It's things like tourism. You know, staycations have seen such a boom in popularity since the pandemic. That's a trend that's kind of continuing. People really love the chance to go and stay on a working farm. So farmers can come to the show and see everything, really, from the pods, you know, some really kind of cool futuristic pods, to the traditional shepherd's huts, and see the options that there are out there on the market to be able to boost the diversification offering, essentially.
So plenty of diversification ideas, lots to look at, and it's co-located with other relevant shows, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. So it's part of Land, Leisure and Tourism, and there's a holiday park show there. It's a 2-day show. It's absolutely massive, actually. I think it's really kind of trying to open farmers' eyes to see everyone's looking for something different, aren't they? Everyone wants a USP. And one of the things that came out of last year's event, one of the seminars that I was chairing, was that have something that is Instagram worthy. You know, you want some part of your farm that is Insta worthy. So even if it's just one area that looks particularly beautiful or something to see and to have that visual image of, is something that people are going to post on social media. And I'd never really sort of thought of that before, but I think that's, you know, farmers are becoming really savvy to that and looking for something that's a little bit different.
Yeah, picture says 1,000 words, definitely. Loads of exhibitors. I note that DEFRA are there, the RPA as well. But as you say, you chaired one last year, seminars, workshops, etc.
Yeah, that's it. There's so many different elements to it. And I think it's one of those shows where farmers, you know, and other business owners can come and see what's on offer, but then also talk to those advisors that you just mentioned there, you know, how to navigate the planning system, you know, the tax implications of diversification, you know, finding the right thing that suits your business, because obviously every business is so different. Also, you know, politically, we are coming to a point, you know, we will have had the budget just before the show. So there will be hopefully a little bit more certainty and some direction around things like planning, business rates and the tax implications of that as well. So hopefully by the 6th and 7th of November at the NEC, we'll have a little bit clearer idea of what's happening in terms of, you know, that kind of political landscape, which of course has such a massive impact on making those business decisions.
So 6th and 7th of November at the NEC, where do we go for more information and tickets?
Yep. So if you just head to farmbusinessshow.co.uk and all the information, all the exhibitors, there's loads of really nice kind of case studies on farmers who have already on their diversification journey.
Thanks, Olivia. Tickets and info at farmbusinessshow.co.uk. Time for Crop Doctor Sean Sparling to talk crops, agronomy and slugs. Morning, Sean.
Yes, good morning, Steve. More of the same weather-wise then. You know, things really don't dry out much in a wet time, do they? They're not getting a chance. But clearly the wet conditions and the almost perfect breeding season we've seen this year are causing some consternation regarding slugs. But after the melee of a few weeks ago, activity surprisingly seems to have levelled out a little over this last 7 days or so on mine. But just because you haven't seen any damage or any evidence of slugs, that doesn't mean they're not there. So get your traps out and keep up a very rigid regime of regular monitoring over the next few weeks. That's the order of the autumn as ever for slugs. I am a little surprised, as I say, there's been as little damage as I've found this last week. But again, as I say, assume nothing. Keep your eyes open, go and check yourself. I don't mean go and check yourself, I mean go out and have a look for yourself. Don't just rely upon a visit from your agronomist once a week or once a fortnight and hope they'll find the slugs before they wipe your crops out. It's a very fluid situation when it comes to slugs, so make sure that you and others are on it with you. They'll munch away underground on the seed with their horny little radulas just as readily as they will the young emerging plants. It may be wet, but it's not wet enough to drown them like it did last autumn. They're not amphibious, but they are voracious and they will be loving your wet, cloddy seed beds. You know, it's a bit catch-22 to be fair in these conditions. Obviously slug pellets are going to be vital to save some of these fields over the coming weeks, but even a wet process pellet isn't going to be effective for long if it pours with rain on it, as we saw last year. So clearly prioritise the more backward bits, the yet to emerge and the starting to emerge bits, particularly on the less than perfect, cloddier, rougher, more open natured seed beds, again, of which there are far too many. And where you're following crops like oilseed rape or beans, or where there's been a history of slug issues in the past, or where there's a lot of trash following the combine, or whether you're following cover crops or where you've put muck on. So pretty much check everything everywhere and on a regular basis, because everything has the potential for a slug issue this autumn. Fields which already have 2 or 3 leaves or more are probably still growing faster than the slugs can graze them. But if and when you do go, put on plenty of bait points and monitor those pellets daily to see if they're being taken by the slugs or not. Cheaper to spread slug pellets than it is to re-drill a field a week, so do be proactive. Obviously, it's not all slug damage in the patchily bits of emerging wheat, because thanks to the conditions of the last few weeks, we're already seeing the effects on seed, where some field areas lay a bit too wet. Burst seeds, easy enough to find behind in a place or two. We're also seeing herbicide damage from preems being washed down to the young roots and being taken up by the seedling wheat, or where dodgy seed beds mean you've got exposed or shallow seeds. So all the environmental conditions are playing their part as well. Not a lot we can do about the wet and the weather, but slugs are something you may be able to influence if the gods are with you. If you can go drilling, you need to pay particular attention when you're applying your residuals, which are obviously crucial for blackgrass control, because they can and they will cause vivid and dramatic foliar uptake symptoms if you get it wrong. And that can be terminal if you get it really wrong. By the way, if and when you are able to consider mauling a bit more wheat in the ground, make sure that you're accounting for these dodgy seedbed conditions and increase the percentage of expected field losses in your calculation. If in doubt, speak to your advisor about it and get their guidance before you get stuck in, and hopefully, I mean that figuratively rather than literally, on the worst, the heavier and the worst blackgrass field. Realistically, as optimum drilling opportunities are causing the conditions become rarer and rarer, then thoughts inevitably will turn to broadcasting the seed on and harrowing it in rather than drilling it. Now, you may have loads of expensive bits of fancy kit that, to do that job, but ultimately you're going to be spreading it on and harrowing it in. But broadcast crops established that way are not only going to need a higher seed rate to account for much higher field losses, they are also going to be at far higher risk of adverse herbicide effect because of the inevitable and unavoidable inconsistency of the seed depth and from slug damage. So always check the labels of any intended herbicides before you go applying a pre-em to those broadcast fields. There are several products and active substances which have label restrictions against applying them to broadcast crops, in which case you're going to need to go once the crop is fully up in rows, if that product is still legal post-emergence. So that's going to be the safest thing for the herbicide if it's legal at that point, but it's not going to be the optimum timing for blackgrass if that's what you're going after. So do again speak to your advisor and be guided by them. Drilling is always going to be preferable to broadcasting in a blackgrass situation because the pre-em stands a far better chance of not hurting the seed, because it's likely to be at a regular and controlled depth if you've drilled it, and of course of killing the blackgrass when you're in control of that seed depth. Also try to simplify any herbicide mixtures as well. If you've been delayed and the crop didn't get its pre-em on, things like straight flufenacet or straight sinmethylene are going to be safer to an emerging crop than, for example, trial April, sulfur carb or pendimethalin. But again, check the label restrictions regarding timings on emergence, establishment methods, calendar date, grow stage restrictions and all that jazz. And for goodness sake, be careful around the first frosts onto the crop if it is just emerging. But I explained all that last week. Have a listen back to that. So it's wet. The nights are drawing in. The clocks have already gone back and I'm starting to annoy myself now. So let's see what the next 7 days bring.
Thanks as ever, Sean. What happens to the farm when mum or dad or a senior partner dies? What if not all the children want to continue working the farm? What happens to tenants and contractors? We'll look at the markets and talk succession planning for farmers next.
The Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. For all your steel needs, call their friendly experts.
The Week in Agriculture. This is The Farming Programme with Steve Orchard.
Many farms combine the business, the family home, the family and business relationships all in one. What happens then when mum or dad or one of the senior partners dies? Who takes over? Who gets what? Who sorts it all out? Welcome partner at Bridge McFarlane Solicitors in Market Raising, Christina Starling, to talk about succession planning, which might be a dry subject and one that we don't really want to talk about, but it can cause so many problems if it's not dealt with early. Christina, there are particular things to consider for farmers, aren't there?
Farming clients, generally when they come to see me, their main concerns are inheritance tax and number two, distribution of the assets, because the farmhouse and the farm usually sit together. And there's also the concern about how can we equalise the assets between the different types of beneficiaries that there might be. So, for example, if you've got a mixture of farming children, the ones that are involved in the farm, and then you've got non-farming beneficiaries who are children probably that live away, own jobs, etc. So for farmers, they want to make sure that there is some form of equalisation, but it can be really difficult to achieve, because if you've got the main asset being the farm, how do you achieve an equalisation if you don't have any other assets?
And are you trying to do that, I guess, without having to sell the farm?
Absolutely. So an alternative could be that they leave everything divided equally or in different shares, but then what you're doing is leaving the beneficiary that's farming having to pay out their siblings, which isn't always the best way to carry on the farm. So it's looking at different ways around that.
And then you've got this difficulty that there is a long tradition, in particularly in rural communities, of the sort of handshake agreement or the verbal agreement. And then, of course, mum or dad's gone, and next generation is left to pick up the pieces without it being in writing. And I guess that's the key to it, isn't it?
Yeah, so I see different types of businesses. So we see the sole trader, the farming partnership, and then farms that are in a farming company. And certainly farming partnerships, they don't always have partnership agreements, or they do, and they date back to the 1950s, of which probably the partners have changed and they've never looked at it again. And it's deciding what is considered a partnership or business asset and what is in somebody's own personal estate. So those are key questions to ask. And if you are in business and you don't have a partnership agreement, then that's something that we would look at as well as looking at succession planning.
So partnership agreement, absolutely essential. Will, that's got to be important as well, hasn't it?
Wills are really important because, of course, that sets out who they want to deal with sorting everything out when they're not here, and also who they want to benefit, because promises, handshakes are made. But it's not legal unless it's written down in the legal document, which is the will.
And there have been stories of people coming to solicitors, getting to court and so on, where they're saying, I know it says that in the agreement, but this is what he really meant. That's no good, is it?
No, it's not enough. It has to be written down clearly and witnessed clearly. And of course, when a solicitor prepares it, there's contemporaneous notes made of what the client wanted, what the understanding of the assets owned were. So it's really important to seek professional advice.
Okay. And with a will, it's never too early, is it really?
Nope. You can never start planning too early. And it's actually essential to start planning early rather than leaving it till you retire, because there's not a lot of planning that we can do. For example, if gifts are going to be made, you have to outlive those gifts by 7 years, or else they're counted back in the estate for inheritance tax. So it's essential to start the planning at an early age.
We've got the budget coming up, and we're not going to talk about specifics because that could completely change next week. But one of the biggest concerns has got to be income tax and inheritance tax.
Yeah, absolutely. So inheritance tax is the tax which is charged on assets that are left after somebody has died. Now, the inheritance tax threshold, the allowance, is £325,000. So that's how much you can leave in your estate to somebody without being taxed. Or if you're leaving it to your spouse, it's exempt from inheritance tax or even a charity. Agricultural property relief is what, of course, interests farmers, because it's the relief from inheritance tax on agricultural assets subject to conditions being satisfied. And usually that's 100%. So it's a very valuable and generous relief, which may or may not change in next week's budget.
Okay. And we've talked about families, but there are other considerations like tenancies, contractors with the farms.
Yes, absolutely. And these are things that all have to be taken into consideration when somebody dies, especially if they're a sole trader. You know, who has the capacity to carry on running the farm? Well, technically it would lie to the executors in the will, but if there's no will in place, then where does it fall to? And that's under the intestacy rules, and it becomes very complicated.
Very important, as we said, to get everything in writing and to make sure it's all done properly and it's legal and above board and so on. But what if I've done all that lot and we change our minds?
That's fine. So you can amend your will at any time in the future. The great thing about setting up a will and starting planning at an early stage is that you've got time to make these changes over and over again, as many times as you want to, because circumstances change. And the great thing about the will is it can be rewritten. As long as you've still got capacity to do so, it can be written and the changes taken into account.
And we talked about changing the thing, but it's important, whether you need to change it or not, to review things regularly, because circumstances do change.
Yes, we recommend that people review their circumstances every 5 years, whether that's physically getting the will out and having a look at it, but generally any changes in their own circumstances or within the family or with the budget.
To sort of sum up, plan it, get it in writing, treat it as a gradual process, revisit things regularly, start well in advance and get advice.
Yes, absolutely.
And that advice would be from somebody like you, a solicitor. Would that be the first place to go?
Yes. Touching base with your solicitor, because they're going to prepare the will for you and they'll be able to take you through the inheritance tax advice and most likely point out the other areas that they need to consider. The advice also would be that if they've got an accountant or financial advisor, that there might be a dual meeting between client, legal professional and accountant so that we can all work together to achieve what the client wants.
Christine, there are obviously lots of firms offering such advice around Lincolnshire and beyond. If somebody wants to talk to Bridge McFarland, where would they go?
Our website is www.bridgemcfarland.co.uk.
Christine, thank you for joining us on the Farming Programme. Some excellent advice, and let's hope this avoids some problems with families in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Farming Programme.
Market reports.
Starting with livestock from Louth Market auctioneer Edward Middleton. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. This week, prime steers all in average 306.5 pence per kilo and prime heifers all in average 298.51 pence per kilo. Top price in the steers went to J&S Brooks of Strubby at 306.5 pence per kilo or £1,823.68 pence. In the heifers, top in the pence per kilo was John Thilby of Kexby at 309.5 pence per kilo, and in the pounds per head were J&S Brooks of Strubby at £1,679.10. Moving on to the sheep, increased entry this week with an SQQ of 275.34 pence per kilo and an all-in average of 118.91 pounds per head. Joint top price this week in the lambs went to AJ Colson Sons of Oscoby with a super pen of 52 kilo Charolais at 140 and LJ Fairburn and Son Limited of Olford with a pen of 58 kilos. On the pence per kilo, weekly supporters Ben and Pippa Williams of Mablethorpe topped at 301 pence per kilo. On to the cull ewes, an average this week of £70.52. Blue tongue restrictions are taking its toll on the cull ewes at the moment. But saying that, a top price this week of £131 from Otby House Farming Company of Walesby. Stall lambs, an average this week of £75.01. Top price of £83 from M.A. Everard of Braytoft. Just a quick roundup of our second store sale on Friday the 18th of October. Heifers topped at £1,600. Steers topped at £1,390 for ADV Limited of Skegness. In carvers topped at £1,570. And the cow and calf outfits topped at £1,500. Next store sale is on Monday the 4th of November. Entries are wanted for that. Any breeding cattle or store cattle, we've got 80 plus entered so far. I'm Edward Middleton, auctioneer at Louth Livestock Market.
Thanks, Edward. So how have the grain markets performed this week? Open Fields' Alice Killam. Morning, Alice.
Good morning, Steve. Sometimes markets don't really make much sense. It is true that some of the front month contracts around the globe are beginning to get quite technical, and it is perhaps better to look at months which are further forward and then working your way back. But we can't deny that this market has taken a hit. It's come down probably £10-£12 in UK terms in 3 weeks, but there is nothing obvious that has really changed. The good news for this week at least is that the weather has been much kinder, which most have taken advantage of. The question of why this global market has dropped is not easy to answer. In a press conference on Wednesday, President Putin proposed the creation of a grain exchange to sit alongside other future agreements between the countries of Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. The advantages are obvious to those within it, but quite worrying for those who are not. A quick look at global soybeans gives a pretty easy example of what could happen. The biggest seller in the world by some margin is Brazil, and the biggest buyer by a continent is China. A sells to B and takes everybody else out of the market, including the USA. I understand the negativity that this could cause, but nothing has happened. Is this really a solid reason for the funds to start selling again? Let's stick with the US market. Low demand is something I have read a couple of times this week also. combining with the obvious harvest pressure that certainly is happening in the US market. But ethanol production in the US is strong, currently up 3% year on year so far, so that is not a bearish story for corn. The weekly corn export sales, which were released late this week, are the strongest weekly numbers that we have seen for 3.5 years. And quite importantly, no or very little Chinese involvement either. Because of this, and some US maps which are doing the rounds discussing the lack of soil moisture in some regions, corn has made a tiny recovery in recent days. You can't fight the market, and today's market is one of lower prices and poor demand. Certainly that is the feeling we get trading in the UK. The demand has been swallowed up by imported grains. This is most certainly true of Group 1 wheat, which has descended from a £55 premium to a £40 premium in around 3 weeks, and by cheaper feed grains also, both wheat and maize, which have found its way into the northeast of England. If we need to trade spot grains, then we have no choice. We are back to the levels that we have seen just after harvest, and we must keep going. There is business still to be done pre-Christmas, but it's not huge. If you are able, look towards the Jan to March market, where there is a good carry for everything. And to play the longer game into April to July, perhaps sit it out, just to see if some logic takes over. A couple of positives to finish the week. Rapeseed is still climbing, defying its soybean neighbour, with the spread getting wider during the course of the week. Some of the demand is from buyers who need physical rapeseed to cancel their short, which is fine, but is not a true reflection of the wider market if you have entered into a long-term supply agreement with a crush. But positive news, we've moved well beyond the £400 per tonne number, which was a trigger for many. Oats too have moved higher in the last 5 to 7 days. Perhaps the domestic market has been spooked by discussions about potential exports. Some of these exports may never take place, of course, but a £10 rise over the course of a week is certainly welcome to us. Let's finish. There doesn't seem much logic left in the market for me at the moment. Some guide prices for this week, circa Friday morning. Feed wheat, November, 180 to 190. January, 185 to 195. May, 190 to 200. Feed barley, October, 145 to 155. February, 150 to 160, and May, 155 to 165. Oilseed rape, November, 410 to 415, and May, 420 to 425. As usual, please call for firm values.
Thanks, Alice.
The Farming Programme. 5-day forecast.
Bit of rain for early Monday, but after that, a dry week. Plenty of patchy sunshine. Nice and settled this week under high pressure. Winds south to southwest and in single figures. Daytime highs in the mid-teens and staying just in double figures overnight. Budget on Wednesday then. We'll look at the impact on agriculture next Sunday, along with the rest of the week in farming. I'm Steve Orchard. Until then, have a great week.
The Farming Programme with Arrowquip Steel Stockholders, Withambrook Industrial Estate Grantham. BSI ISO 9001 accredited.